stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated LGBT Radio. I think that's the first time I've opened with that, but you know, I've got to get used to that. In a couple of weeks, every Thursday night, Rob Watson is going to be joining me as the regular co-host for Rated LGBT Radio. I've got to see if I can get a new, we'll have to ask Rob what they call them. I think they call them like bumpers or something like that, to kind of, you know, lead into the show, and I'll see if we can get his name on there too, because it's important that everybody know that it's going to be Rob's night to be on with me on a regular basis, and I'm honored and grateful for that. I'm going to bring Rob on in just a real quick second, because this next hour is our last regular hour of the year, because tomorrow's Friday night dance party is actually going to be Friday morning at 11 a.m., and we're going to be talking to Margot Ray, Bunny Sigler, and hearing fantastic Christmas music, but that's going to be it. So we're really just going to be doing Christmas music tomorrow from 11 to 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. So tonight's the last night of the year, and I'm honored that Rob has chosen to be here tonight. Really grateful to him for not only his friendship, but also the I learn a lot from this man, and he does his own show on KSCO 1080 AM out in Santa Cruz every Saturday night at 7 o'clock. If you can go online and listen to it if you're not in the area, I highly encourage you to do so. It's a breathtaking, entertaining program, and always have fascinating topics and guests. But Rob's been just a breath of fresh air this year, so I'm thrilled, delighted that we're going to be doing a regular weekly show next year. Next year is 2 weeks away. But here is kind of a recap of where we've been this week. We've just had two other shows this week. Monday we had Gary Bloomsack and then Paul Benvictor. And you're going, who in the heck is Paul Benvictor? Well, if you go onto IMDb and look at Paul Benvictor, Benvictor is his last name. The word hyphen is not there, it's just the dash. You'll go like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that guy was on your show, because he's been in over 50 major motion pictures, tons of TV. He's starring in the new HBO series called Vinyl in February. But Gary was coming on to talk about a new program that he's got called the American Theater Channel, and it's bringing live theater into your home, much like MTV revolutionized the music video and the music business in the early 80s. Gary's doing this with theater. And so he came on the show to talk about that project that he's working on. And then yesterday we had psychic Rebecca Fisk on the show, and that was really super cool. Yesterday, it just seems like I've been doing shows all week, but I think it's because also yesterday I spent 2 hours with Sheena Metal. She is an L.A. fixture in the radio and broadcasting and entertainment scene for the last 20-some-odd years, and she hosts a wildly popular radio show called L.A. Talk Radio, the Sheena Metal Experience. And on Wednesdays, they do a program for indie music artists. Gee, that would be me! And so she had me on for a full 2 hours yesterday from 3 to 5. Now, normally I would just say that's a huge honor enough, but I just spent 2 hours with her this past Friday. So in a span of like 5 days, I was on her show twice for a total of 4 hours, thrilled beyond delighted. And I loved doing the show with her, with like real radio microphones and a soundboard and all kinds of, you know, cool equipment in a studio. And with $1 million or so, I'll do that next year as well and get that incorporated into the house, because it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so I am honored and just grateful to know Sheena and to call on her and be able to call her a friend. So that was kind of cool. But again, Rob's going to be on tonight. So I always say, without further ado, I just wanted to get some of these other housekeeping things in before bringing Rob on, because it's going to be nonstop LGBT radio. I will tell you, next Friday, here's the last programming note. Next Friday, we're going to do a broadcast on Christmas morning for you with the Chrysagus Brothers, a very Chrysagus Christmas. It's a show that we did 2 Sundays ago, and hugely popular, but you know why it's popular. The guys are hysterical, but they've also got a brand of contemporary Christian music that I just don't think you hear a lot of, or at least I don't hear a lot of, and all of the Christmas music they played were all original songs, so it's not like the Chrysagus Brothers redo Jingle Bells for the 500th time. You know, it's all original music, and I think you'll have a great time listening to them, and I'm just honored and blessed that they took time out of their busy holiday touring schedule to do a show with me a couple weeks ago. But that's going to be rebroadcast, already pre-set up and ready to go Friday the 25th, so Merry Christmas to you a little bit early. And now, officially, I'm welcoming Mr. Rob Watson back to Rated LGBT Radio!
I am so excited to be here. Even though this isn't our official show yet, this is still.
What is our official show? We're just doing a preview.
This is our amniocentesis of the radio
show. You know, they, for people who got in line long enough earlier this week, you know, they did go see Star Wars on Monday night. So this is kind of like the Star Wars of radio.
Hey, I like that. Let's own that. Yes, let's own that. Definitely,
Star Wars
we are
of radio.
Star Wars of radio.
Yeah. Nobody's
unless it's a bomb, and then forget it.
Yeah. No.
It won't be.
I think if they don't do over $200 million this weekend, I will be shocked because every theater down here. Somebody posted a screenshot of one of the theaters nearby, and they had a Star Wars showing every 15 minutes on the hour. You know, throughout like midnight or something like that. I mean, just something unheard of and ridiculous. And I'm just like, I'm so glad I'm not going to the movies.
They should actually already know that, right? Because weren't all the seats pre-sold for like
pre-sold.
Weeks in advance?
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
They should have. I mean, they have our money already, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's funny.
I have a secret. I am actually seeing it on the 23rd. Is my pre-bought Star Wars tickets.
I will fully support you. I have no problem waiting until it's a $3 theater, and I'm the only person in the theater to see it, so I'll wait until July. So it's really cool. But it was, you know, I was at lunch today. I had lunch with Miles High Productions CEO and founder Chip Schutzman, and Chip is responsible for putting together our second annual show tomorrow with his artist that he represents. So big shout out to Chip, and thanks for that in advance. But before Chip and his team arrived, I'm sitting there. And we have these guys, and I'm a horrible judge of age because, you know, I feel like I'm like 25. I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, that ain't no 25. But I'm also realizing that, you know, I probably at least emotionally or, you know, with a hard, jaded heart, I'm probably like 115. But across the table from me is this guy, and it's a group of guys. They all work together, you can tell, because they're all a bunch of gomers. And they come in and sit down, and the one guy has like on a Star Wars t-shirt, and so you knew the topic of the day at their table was going to be the Star Wars thing. And you know, I eavesdrop with the best of them, Rob, and this guy's like, oh yeah, I've got my tickets and I'm going to go tonight, and I've got my Star Wars socks on, I've got my Star Wars underwear on, and I'm going to have my Star Wars this and that and the other. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to guess he has to be close to my age. I mean, so it wasn't like he was like, you know, 14 or something like this. So, you know, this guy has probably had like, you know, Empire Strikes Back underwear since the time he was like, you know, 12. And, you know, I would hate to think what happens when he brings a date home and they see, you know, the, you know, Return of the Jedi dish plates. And then, you know, you've got the Star Wars bed sheets and things like that. And he still sleeps on a single bed. But I don't know.
Well,
I'm not,
here's the thing, though. If I can ask you a personal question on that,
sure.
How old were you, or what was your life like when the very first Star Wars movie came out?
Well, I did go to Lancaster Mall in Salem, Oregon, to go see, and that was like, you know, that was the place to go, and that was the closest theater to where I lived. And so my folks dropped me off at the mall, went to go see Star Wars, and I thought it was great, but I'm going to guess I was probably maybe like 10, 11, something like that. You know, I was junior high school range. And so I liked it, enjoyed it. But, you know, it wasn't like, oh, my God, it's Star Wars. Now, I did have friends that were, oh, my God, it's Star Wars. So, and I was, but I also didn't, you know, I also didn't really get into like Dungeons and Dragons because, you know, rolling the octagonal dice was too complex for me. You know, so when Empire Strikes Back came out, I did go see that. And
well,
I,
now
I've
here's my theory,
that
though.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah. You're kind of on the younger edge of the cusp of when Star Wars came out, because let's face it, if somebody was too much younger than you, they probably didn't see Star Wars when it first came out.
Yeah.
But now I am a little bit older. I was actually I shouldn't have done this because now I'm going to have to confess. I actually was very early in college when Star Wars came out.
Okay.
So we've just revealed how the difference between our ages. But for me, walking into that theater and that whole beginning of Star Wars, the music and the, you know, from whatever it is, you know, galaxy far, far away, da, 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 and that whole opening, for people my age and high schoolers and all that, who walked in, you know, we'd been to other movies before, and it was this whole new experience of cinema and, you know, music and special effects and everything that just kind of whooshed right into it. I mean, it was an experience more than just a movie. And so it is, in my view, has affected this whole generation of people, men and women, because the one other thing about Star Wars was that it was one of the first action films where the lead woman was not damsel in distress. I mean, Princess Leia.
Right.
You know,
she's powerful.
She could hold her own with everybody else. And what I've noticed, because I'm in a lot of dad blogger groups and that type of thing, Star Wars is for a lot of dads of this generation is this almost like a religious experience. I mean, it's,
and I don't get it.
It's not that, well, it's got that aspect to it. I mean, the Force and trusting and, you know, a lot of the things that are in my favorite album, Blonde Jesus, and its predecessor, you know, Eyes Wide Open or Eyes Wide, you know, is, you know, being open to the force of the universe. And that is the spiritual tone of Star Wars and the Force and, you know, the dark side. And so it kind of laid out the forces of our spiritual experience in this science fiction movie that, you know, and as religion has been losing its grasp on the population, Star Wars has been picking it up. So I think there's a lot of elements there that made this a popular experience.
I love how you have this very deep and introspective way of looking at everything, Rob. And I think this is one of the reasons I enjoy talking to you outside of the show, but also having you on as a guest, because I'll be sure that there is, you know, only one way to look at something, and then you throw that in, and I'm like, that totally makes sense. And I try not to be just a lemon and jump off every cliff with you, but I can't help it because your power of persuasion just kind of says, well, there is no other way to think about it. Now that Rob's explained it, that makes total sense. I get it.
Now, if I could just get my boys to have that point of view. Dad explained it that way, therefore,
it must,
we're done. No further argument.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, well, speaking of your kids, with Christmas coming around here, what's going on with you and the family?
Well, we're hitting a new plateau of Christmas because the boys are both 13 now, and they have actually held on to the magic of Christmas, for lack of a better word, longer than most kids. Because most kids have known what's going on for quite a few years. I wrote an article about telling them what's going on. We haven't quite had the full conversation yet. So I think it's sort of assumed they know, but I'm not for sure.
So
but,
have they brought
an article? No, which means they probably know because, you know, I think they feel like if they blow the covers on Santa Claus, then no more Santa Claus.
But, well, that's thank you. And you had an article that you're telling me about before the show.
Right. And what this article was is it's my way that I am telling them about what I call it, the truth about Santa Claus. And the truth about Santa Claus is that there was a man. There's a man that was, his name was Nicholas. He was Turkish. He became a saint, Saint Nicholas. And he had a reputation for this enormous generosity and doing things for people without it being known that he was the one that did these things. And so the article that I wrote and the point that I'm making with my voice is this is Santa Claus. This is where the real Santa Claus originated from. This is who he is. And I even show them a picture. They did a rendition of him on PBS at one point. And he is dark-skinned, you know, Arabic-looking. That is his – it's not the white hair Scandinavian type of look. And that is Santa Claus. And my point to them about Christmas is Christmas isn't a falsehood, but they've been fascinated with magic and, you know, going to magic shows where they're, you know, we know the magician is up there doing an illusion and we, you know, the whole storyline gets told up there and we watch these things and we see with our own eyes things happen, but we know that's not exactly what made them happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas is like that. It is magic. Magic is done. Presents appear from seemingly nowhere. There's a story that they, you know, Santa Claus comes through the chimney and deposits them. And while there are lots of things about the magic tale of it that we can point to and say, well, that's not really possible, the fact is it's weaved together by magic. And I'm not going to admit to them who has actually been doing the magic all these years in their life, but they can just know that magic has been done and these presents have appeared by virtue of the spirit of this man who lived many years ago. And now at their age, they are the ones who are now being chartered with taking up that spirit and finding ways that they can give without being caught and known to who they are. And so that is how I'm telling them about Santa Claus.
So did you have a memory of sometime when you were a kid that just really sticks with you about Santa, or maybe, you know, a mall experience or, you know, something like that that you just look back on really fondly?
I have actually full memory back to the point where I was 3 years old.
I'm so shocked.
I remember it all. Yeah. I've always loved the fascination with it. My big memory actually, and we're in California, there were two amusement parks that existed back in the day. They were each called Santa's Village. One was in Lake Arrowhead, and one was actually up here near Santa Cruz. And they were called Santa's Village, and you went, and it was, each park was Santa's Village. And it was, you know, it really was a magical, wonderful place. Both of them were. They were kind of duplicates of the other. Neither one exists to this day. But those are some of my best memories because it had everything there. It had the real reindeer and it had, you know, a Santa in his own house in the middle. And the big center of the park was a big Christmas tree that was a ride. And it was just, you went and you felt Christmassy everywhere you went in that whole park. They closed the Northern California one down quite a few years ago. Actually, I was at the Southern California one 2 weeks before it closed down. My niece, who is now 21, was there, and she was a little girl at the time. And the LA Times was there, and she had a gingerbread cookie, and they took her picture. So she's kind of become the poster girl for the closing of Santa's Village, Southern California.
Oh, wow. Right. How cool
so,
is that?
Yeah. Yeah, Santa's a bud of mine. We're close.
We're tight. Oh my gosh! Now, did you ever go sledding or inner tubing or anything like that up to the mountains and, you know, partake of any cold activities as a child?
I lived in Virginia. That was my visit to the snow. First through third grade, we were living in Virginia, and every winter back there, I don't know how it is now with kind of the global warming thing, but back then snow came in blizzards during the winter, and for me that was just absolutely wonderful. For my folks, I'm sure it was a bit of a nightmare. I do remember one winter where my dad had to literally get out with my sled and walk like 5 miles pulling the sled so he could get groceries from the closest 7-Eleven.
Oh wow.
So I'm sure that, you know, as parents wasn't fun, but for kids it was just fantastic. It was, you know, so great. And so I've got great romantic visions of the snow as you and I live in wonderful California where we never actually have to deal with it. But yeah, so that was really cool. I have taken the boys to the snow up in Tahoe during a blizzard, which was also a blizzard. So they got to experience what really harsh snow feels like. But
what do they think about snow?
Yeah.
Do they like it, or are they like, you know, that was fun, Dad, but
a little bit of combination. They really liked it, but then I don't think too much more of it would have gone over real big. You know, they like playing with it, but they really love being able to leave it.
Yeah, I think that I'm a big fan of seeing it on TV for about half of a lifetime movie, and then I'm ready to have sunshine again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's what there was a funny piece. I'm sure it's buzzing around Facebook somewhere. That is a diary of a guy who is like you and I, who California goes to a place where they have snow, and he's like, oh, snow, I love it, da 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 da. And at the end of the piece, you know, which is very funny, as he gets there, he's literally ready to kill everybody and everything in the vicinity because of the snow and the snow plows and all the hassle that comes with it. So I'm not naive about that, but I still like having my romantic vision of snow. So that's that.
I think that I like your romantic vision and memories of snow because, you know, and I think if I'm going to be honest with you, I probably hold similar remembrances of the snow. But anytime I have the opportunity to be back in it, which is usually up at my aunt and uncle's up in Overgard, Arizona, and it is bitterly cold, and I'm like, why does anybody ever want to live here? I just can't understand trying to live anywhere other than like Southern California. So anything else beyond that, you know, and this is after I lived in Phoenix and with, you know, temperatures in the 190s for months out of time, and, you know, just miserable, miserable hot weather. And I grew up in Oregon where it was cloudy and not necessarily rainy all the time, but cloudy a lot. And that was, you know, what it was. And so now that I'm in, you know, Southern California and it's sunny 320 days a year, you know, that really to me is like the only, you know, sane, logical option. I don't understand people who I love living in Chicago or I love living into wherever. I just think you have lost your mind. You need to come to California, but I'm glad that they don't.
Yeah, no, it's true. Although I have to say, again, with my romantic vision of the holidays and everything else, when I'm singing songs about the weather outside is frightful, and I go, yeah, it's really frightful because which sunblock number should I be using today? It sort of detracts from the whole ambiance of it. But you know, we're living in a weird weather pattern life now on this planet. So I'm not sure white Christmas is what it was even, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but.
Well, I think we're just lucky this year, you know, because a lot of the folks on the East Coast, I was looking at the weather report tonight on the news, and, you know, when it was 55 here in Huntington Beach at, you know, 5 o'clock or whatever, you know, back in New York City at 8, you know, it's 8 p.m. their time. So at 8 p.m. their time, 5 our time, the local temperature was still in the mid-50s. So I think, you know, we just have an anomaly this summer or this winter time with having such a warm winter where it's been traditionally horrible in the past. And I don't necessarily think that's such a bad thing. I know a lot of people are like, it's the warmest winter on record. But, you know, you've had some really crappy winters the last couple of winters, East Coast. How quickly thou forgets what a miserable experience it is. And, you know, who knows? They could probably still end up having some major snowstorms. It just doesn't hit yet. So, you know, just like El Nino is going to be hitting us in another 3 or 4 weeks for the next 3 or 4 months, and we're going to have, you know, crazy rain. You know, we'll look back on this a year from now and say, well, we just don't get enough rain. Rob, do you remember when you called me and you were flooded? Do you remember that?
We're getting rain.
Yeah.
Now, not to be critical, but I do think we have to elevate our conversation here. We're talking about the weather.
I know, but it's Christmas weather.
That's true. All right. But I'm anxious to get to your topic. Ever since you mentioned it, I've been sort of excited about it because I have horrible confessions to make. But
well, okay,
so whenever you're ready to pull that one out, yeah.
And I want to invite anybody who's listening tonight. So we've got a bunch of people who are listening in the chat room. I've got a bunch of people on Facebook who are pinging me, and I've also got a bunch of people who have dialed into the studio lines, but you're just dialed in to listen. So that's totally okay, and I support you 100% in doing so. If you want to ask or join the conversation, you've got to press 1 on your keypad, though. But call in now at 323-657-1493. If you want to chat, press 1 on your phone, and we'll put you on the air. But the question of the day for me is, and this came up on another show, and I wasn't in the car long enough to hear all of it, but it just really intrigued me, and I said, Rob, I want to talk about this. And I'm bringing it up for a reason, so I'll kind of like back the story up, but what do you do in the car while you're driving that you should not do? And the reason I bring this up is that the last few days, and everybody's going to go, oh, woe is me, Garrett. What a first world problem you have. You know, my heart just goes out to you. But I do have, when I am running around, I always have my iPad with me because I don't have a cell phone. So I'm able to check, email, I can text, I can blah, 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 blah. And I don't text while I drive. I do admit that if I quote unquote text, I'm dictating through Siri, and it's usually like at a stoplight or something like that. But my SIM card in my iPad, for whatever reason, is kind of not working right now. And it's one of those where I always have connection to the internet, always. And my iPad now says, no SIM card. So unless I'm here at the house or I'm connected somewhere with Wi-Fi, and I don't even know really how to do that because I've never had an iPad that only connects via Wi-Fi. So asking for people's Wi-Fi passwords is a foreign concept to me. I don't even know how to use that type of language. May I have your Wi-Fi password, please? I don't know how to say that. So I'm driving around. And historically, if, somebody is sending me a message or, like today I was going up to meet Miles High Productions for lunch, and I'm like, I'm going to have to hope that they show up because I don't have a cell phone and my iPad is not working. So if they text me or try to call or anything, I have no way of communicating. And I said, this is kind of exciting, driving 45 miles and hoping that your dates show up. So I thought, and I'm usually very connected. Usually not more than if I'm driving, I'm not paying attention to the iPad, but I'm usually not more than an hour or 2 hours away from, reconnecting to somebody or responding to some type of message. And I felt very disconnected the last few days, but I'm going to tell you, Rob, I don't necessarily not like that. I'm just finding it unusual because it's the same experience I had when I got rid of my cell phone and people just said, you've lost your mind. And I said, I'm not curing cancer. I don't use my cell phone except for texting unless it's a rare emergency, and I'm spending $75 a month on that when I can also text off of my iPad. So I, kind of 86 that, and I had heartburn for a little bit, Rob, and then as the months has probably been like 2 years now that I haven't had a cell phone, I really am quite okay with not having it. And I'm wondering, do I dare have the audacity to not have my iPad fixed, dare I say replaced, I think it needs to be replaced, but not have the problem addressed and just kind of like, live vicariously through the fact that it could be 1983 again?
Well, that's a choice.
You're so diplomatic. That's a choice. But I guess my whole question of the night is, what do you do while you're driving that you should not be doing? Really stems from my observation the last 2 days is that I think I do pay probably too much attention to my iPad while I'm in traffic.
The iPad I could see being a real problem. I have to admit, I pay far too much attention to my cell phone or my smartphone. I have really weaned myself, although I'm totally confessing, that driving and texting has not been a long-term away for me. I've only gotten away from it, I would say, in the last few months. So okay. I was doing that way too long.
Did you have a triggering event or something that happened that made you say this is something I shouldn't do?
No, nothing dramatic. It just really sinking in that, and I think it's because my cell phone's getting older, so it's not really responding as well as it used to. And that additional non-responsiveness is, I can't be looking at this and double-checking it. Now, I have actually the smartphone phone from hell in terms of trying to use it in the car. And I mean even what I consider being legitimate use of it, because this phone, if I put it in my pocket or whatever, or put it in my back pocket to be more specific, it will butt dial people like that. You know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, I'm hearing this voice out of my pocket and it has called somebody because it rubbed the
you
wrong way
like
or whatever.
That
have I? Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
That's, you know, yeah, there you go. So, and I think there's a crude joke I could insert there, but I won't. you know, never mind. Thing is, when I'm in the car and I'm actually legitimately trying to call someone, I am punching that stupid phone, and it takes me like 10 punches before I get to the number thing that I'm punching that actually calls somebody. And forget about the voice thing, because if I say a voice thing to it, you know, it's like, call mom, call the pop store. No, call mom. It's like, you know, it's like, so it just, you know, it is not my friend. And so a lot of my sins have happened around that. But my biggest sin in terms of doing things in the car, I am absolutely obsessed over music and songs and singing and all that stuff. And one of my greatest joys in my life was the creation of the iPod, because here you have this device that has every bit of music you've ever owned. It's all in this one little compartmentalized thing. You can look up any artist, any song, any time, all of that type of thing. So I have literally 24,000 songs in my
iPod.
Wow. And most of them, like 23,000 of them, are rated. So I have literally listened to each song and given it between a 1-star and a 5-star rating, so that I can then sort my, this is, you know, you're getting all my crazy out now.
I love it.
Yeah. So I can sort songs that way. Well, all of those ratings took place while I was driving. So I would be listening to a song, think about it, and then I have to reach down and do a little punch, punch, punch for all the stars. So there's my big confession, rating songs while driving.
You know, I would really like to sit on a mountaintop and pass judgment upon other people, because I do see people who are talking, and, you know, I don't know how the law works in other states around the United States. In California, if you are holding your phone while you're driving and talking on it, you can get a ticket.
Right.
So I don't know how it works in other states, but so whenever I see anybody holding a phone and talking on it, I'm the first person to go like, oh my goodness, where is that policeman? I can't believe the dun, 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 dun. You know, and so it's, I'm very quick to pass judgment on other people, but of course, if I'm doing something, well, I clearly have, you know, the expanse of training and skills and life events that make me purely singularly qualified to do what I'm doing right. And so I'm actually kind of grateful where I've just now set, you know, the iPad off to the side, because it doesn't pick up any signal no matter what I do, and until I can get to the Apple store tomorrow or over the weekend. And so I've just concentrated on driving, and it's been, you know, this is kind of a new experience, and I've kind of, I don't want to say fallen in love with driving again, but I've fallen in love with paying attention to how I'm driving. And I think that's been very, very interesting for me. But, you know, some of the people that were talking, they were calling into this, you know, radio show, and I'm trying to think, I think it was like Just Jen on SiriusXM. And there was one lady, and she goes, oh, yeah, I'm a sales rep for a cosmetics company, and so I'm in the car all the time. So I can drive with my knees. So while I'm driving with my knees, I can paint my nails and, you know, or paint her toenails is what she was. And I was like, I've seen a lot, but that would just take the cake. You know, but I've seen people shaving. So I always, you know, I always say to ladies, you know, putting on lipstick or putting on mascara or something. I just think that's ridiculous. But I've seen guys shave, you know, with electric razor. I've seen people eat like a bowl of cereal. I've seen, you know, we've all seen somebody eat a hamburger or french fries. But, you know, when you have to hold a bowl and it has milk in it, and you know, you're holding the bowl with one hand, you got a spoon feeding your face with the other, I'm not sure how you're driving your car. So there are just all kinds of different examples of things that people do while they're driving that they shouldn't. And I don't know. What do you think, Rob?
I have to tell you, it is going to get worse because I was in a car with a friend of mine last weekend, and he has one of these new cars that is the next wave of the future. The car has got sensors all the way around it, and it senses the road that you're on. So it literally gives you the opportunity to do hands-free driving.
Oh, I
and
love that.
You know, yeah, but you know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, exactly.
We're playing ping pong and it's like painting pictures and, oh, yeah, the car. The future is heading our way, and I think it's going to make it even more possible. The one that you mentioned, though, is my real worst nightmare of doing things in the car that I shouldn't be doing, which is eating. Because the boys and I used to pack them up in Northern California here, and we'd head out Highway 5 to Southern California. Mm-hmm. And Highway 5, for people who don't live in California, is the most boring stretch of highway imaginable. It is long. It all looks the same. You're just there. And so I would try to minimize our time on it, which means if we had to eat, drive through, get food, eat on the road. Eating a hamburger and have the pickle fall out and drop between your legs and then bounce off the seat and be between your feet somewhere where you're like, okay, is my foot going to slip and I'm going to slide right into, the accelerator? And, that stuff was, dangerous, dangerous stuff there. So watch out for pickles when you're doing things that you should be doing when you drive.
And I always ask for extra pickles. I love pickles.
Oh, the pickle is fine. It went the opposite direction from where it was supposed to go.
Have you ever eaten deep-fried pickles?
No, I have not. Yeah. That
you are totally
repulsive and intriguing at the same time.
Well, have you had deep-fried zucchini before?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Okay, if you love deep-fried zucchini, you will flip your lid over deep-fried pickles. To me, it's deep-fried zucchini times 10 because, everything that you love about the deep-fried zucchini now has the, that sour pickle, the pickle crunch type of a thing. Oh, Rob, I'm telling you, if there's an opportunity for you to ever have deep-fried pickles someplace, you must do it. But I will tell you
that you have now sold me on that, although I have to confess, I have never, ever in my life seen anywhere selling deep fried pickles.
It's rare, to be quite honest. I had it at a place in, I was traveling for business, and where was I? It was some remote, middle of the nowhere type of a place, and my buddy, my sales teammate that I was traveling with, we were at this sports bar or something, and they had deep fried pickles, and I said, well, I got to try that. And I was shocked. And then 2 months later, I was in Oregon. So this goes back 6 years now, but I was 2 months later, I was in Oregon for a wedding, and the bar that I happened to be at had bar food, and they had deep fried pickles. And I said, well, I've got to try that. And I found that you really can't do a bad deep fried pickle, but here's my caveat. If you go to some place and have deep fried zucchini and the deep fried zucchini suck, if they also have deep fried pickles, their deep fried pickles will suck, because if they can't get the deep fried zucchini right, they're not going to do the pickles right either.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got my, because kind of all the things that aren't necessarily good for you all at once.
All at once.
Think about tempura, right. Tempura pickles.
Tempura,
it's a really nice tempura
and ranch
batter.
Dressing. Oh, man.
It makes me hungry. I haven't had dinner yet. I fed the boys that nut.
What are you going to have for dinner?
I made them lasagna, homemade lasagna. So if they left me any, I'll have a little bit of that. But it's really bad if we talk about food, because you're like the angel guy on the shoulder, with the little halo, and, here I'm bringing you, steamed vegetables, and, it's like tofu and all of that. And I'm over here going, okay, how big a stake am I having tonight?
I just need to be honest with you. If I had somebody cook me a really good steak, I would eat a really good steak. I've in the years past, I've made steak. I don't cook steak well. And so the only meat that I cook at the house is chicken breast, because I use the chicken breast for the dog's food. And then I use chicken breast for whatever, you know, whatever concoction that I'm making. It used to be glop, which was fajita soup. Then it was grilled chicken, you know, it was diced up on my salads that I ate for the last 7 months. And now it's part of my vegetable soup, and I shred the chicken on that. So I don't even care how beautifully the chicken's, you know, cooked or marinated or any of that stuff. I just needed to cook it, chicken, not to give me salmonella poisoning. So it's, you know, cooked on my cooker thing, then shredded and put into the soup, and, you know, magically I'm good. But if I had somebody cook me a really good filet, you bet I'd be eating it. But I don't.
Well,
I don't
see, I'm like your mirror opposite, because I make a really good steak. I marinate the meat, and, you know, I know how to broil it and do nice things with it. I don't necessarily do vegetables all that well, although I love them. I actually love a really nice, steamed, crunchy vegetable. And all the pictures of the stuff you do are like, wow, that's great. I would love that. So, you know,
I'm going to give you a secret.
Are you going to show me the magic behind, you know, the illusion of the vegetable?
Yeah. Here's the illusion of the vegetable. So for anybody who's not stalking me on Facebook, you should, because it's fascinating. So if you're listening tonight or in the future and aren't friends with me on Facebook, friend request me. I'm at The Garrett Miller. It's T-H-E Garrett Miller. So it's The Garrett Miller. And as long as you don't put anything profane or anything weird on my wall, you know, welcome to the jungle. But oftentimes I'll post pictures of what I have for lunch, you know, like everybody else does. But I'll just say it this way. I'm on a severe budget, and instead of going out and spending, you know, $30 on lunch and then $1 million on dinner and things like that, I'll have raw vegetables. And so I'll get zucchini squash and an apple and a bell pepper, and I just slice it up. I rinse it. Here's why you think it looks so good. I wash the vegetables first, and I scrub it in case there's any pesticides on it. And then I just, you know, I slice it up and put it on a plate while the vegetables are still kind of wet. And so every time I take a picture, these vegetables look like they're bikini models and they've been oiled down. But all it is fresh vegetables that have just been washed. That's the secret.
It looks great. And yeah, washing vegetables. Okay, that's a new one. I'll have to try that.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. I wash the vegetables. I do.
Okay.
But it's just I don't know. My thing with vegetables, because again, I'll backtrack on a story on this. When years ago when I was in my long term marriage relationship, my partner at the time, who coincidentally also was named Garrett, had a weight problem, and he decided he was going to go on this very advanced diet, and it was vegan.
Oh,
so
wow, that's a big,
he cut
that's
out
a big
meat,
shock.
He cut out, yeah, it was like, boom, right to that. Well, as part of this program he signed up for, he had a hypnotist, he had it wasn't just here's your diet, it was, you know, they had this whole program of, you know, that helped him get through that. Well, me being supportive spouse, I went on this diet with him. I thought I was going to die. It's like every cell in my body felt like it was starving all the time. It was, and I have read that I'm type O, and that type O people generally need meat protein, that we're not good vegetarians. But it was so true for me. It was horrific. It was like, it could not deal with it. So now the way I eat vegetables most of the time is I cook them in with a pot roast, so they, even the vegetables have soaked up the meat juices. I have like meat vegetables are the vegetables I eat. So like I said, you're
fine.
The good little angel on the healthy eating shoulder, and I'm over there on the bad boy shoulder. I don't mind admitting it.
But you know, let's face it. I've lost, and I've done very well this last year keeping my weight off, that I've lost to fit into my blonde Jesus suit. Okay, but unless I'm doing 2 hours of cardio a day plus weights, and some people say I can't even get 20 minutes in a day. I know, you know, you're preaching to the choir, but unless I do 2 hours of cardio a day, even with this, you know, fun diet, and I say diet, it's just, you know, the eating vegetables and eating sensibly, you know, the weight tends to creep back on. And so I don't really have a choice unless I have said, okay, I'm done, you know, trying to look the part, and I'm just going to go be, you know, fat and out of shape. For people who can eat and have a metabolism that's a little bit higher or turbocharged compared to what mine is resting, I am envious and jealous and grateful that you have what you got. But I can't eat the way I would like to any longer and then still maintain the girlish figure. So I've got to have the plate of vegetables for lunch instead of deep fried something. I've got to have, you know, my vegetable soup for dinner or something healthy for dinner versus, you know, the deep fried zucchini and a plate of fried chicken and some pizza on the side with a dash of ice cream, you know, because to me that sounds like heaven. But
for me, it's just, you know, you eat whatever you want and then you get two preteen kids and you chase them around all day long.
Oh, you know, I'd rather have to do my 2 hours of cardio than what you have. So I think it's awesome that you are just one of the world's best dads that's out there, Rob, but never in a million years. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, back in the day when I when David and I first got together, this is, you know, well, is probably going on about 14 years ago now. And when we first got together, you know, and we realized that, you know, this is going to be something that we're going to be in for a long time, blah, blah, blah. We sat down and says, you know, should we really think about, you know, having kids, you know, and we had the crazy idea that I would have, we get an egg from his sister and then, you know, we would have a biological kid together and we get an egg from my sister and then, you know, we'd have a biological kid with him. And, you know, we never did any of that. And I think we kind of thought it was really a neat idea to have kids. And then we started to get more and more dogs and then realized dogs are, you know, that's my speed.
Yeah. You know, I think you're bringing up a good thing though. I mean, it's that process of especially gay couples coming, or gay men especially, because let's face it, we have a little less options than everybody else on kind of doing your own thing in terms of having kids. And you do go through that process. Who I'll call my husband and I went through that same kind of thought process, you know, when we started considering doing that. And it, you know, a lot of it, especially the surrogacy and biological thing, gets very daunting. For us, the thing that really spoke to us, and it doesn't speak to everybody, but it was foster care and going into the foster care system. And we got trained so that we would be able to take care of babies in the foster care system, which meant they were going to be drug exposed in the womb, which was how they would end up very quickly in foster care.
Right.
You know, and that's what we did. And it did take some mental and emotional readjustment, because I was like you, where, like, okay, how can we make this part of us biologically? And stepping away from that is like, okay, well, I feel attached, you know, all those questions came up. And it was actually fantastic because the two kids that I have, there's no beings in the realm of the universe that I could love and feel as intensely as I do with my two kids.
It's not awesome.
Neither one of which share any of my DNA, thank goodness, because their DNA is absolutely fantastic on its own. You know, they didn't need anything like that from me. And it is amazing to me having these kids grow up and seeing what the spiritual and emotional influence and connection that you have with someone who is not from this biological makeup with you, that they are my kids. They are, you know, they're as much my kids as anybody else's kids are their kids. And it's
did that surprise
quite
you?
The life adventure.
Did that surprise you, Rob, do you think? That, you know, that it really impacted you as hard in a good way as it did?
I, you know, it did, it surprises me only in this kind of big, broad retrospect kind of way, like looking back and thinking about what my thought process was years before I had kids and as we led up to that. As the events themselves happened, it wasn't so much surprising as it was enveloping. The minute, and I mean like the minute second I saw each of my sons for the very first time, the feeling and the connection was absolutely overwhelming. It was my one son, Jason, was born 6 weeks early. He weighed 4 pounds. He was in an incubator. That's how he was when I first saw him. The minute I laid eyes on this little tiny being, it was like, this is my kid. And my other son was, it was even weirder because he wasn't even our foster care placement at the time. He was somebody else's. He had been placed with another family. We were watching him. He was just 1 year old. And I came home. My husband had been watching them, and he had already called me and said, you know, this little boy really bonds with our current son that we had. And, you know, there's something very special about him. And I remember the very first moment he was crawling around the side of our kitchen and I was coming the other direction. We met at the dishwasher. My eyes locked with this little 1-year-old crawling boy. And I knew down to the depths of my soul that I was meant to be his daddy. It was like, I don't know how this is going to happen, but you're mine. And it worked out that way. But it's, there's a bigger thing going on, you know, about all of that, I think.
Well, can you believe we've like talked the entire day away? We've got 8 minutes left, which means we've got really 5 minutes because I want to play the Christmas song. So as we get ready for Christmas here, what are some of the traditions that you and your family like to celebrate as you get closer to next week?
Ours are pretty simple. We've already done a couple of them. We do a big thing with decorating the tree, then we all get in big chairs and watch Polar Express, and we bake and we take cookies to the neighbors, and you know that we kind of keep it simple, but that's the type of things that we do.
I love it. So are you a present opener on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
I am delayed gratification all the way. Everything is as much I can say for Christmas Day as possible. You know,
right on.
We really don't do a present Christmas Eve. It's pretty much all saved for the next day. How about you?
Well, in the years where, you know, that was like a big deal, we, you know, I remember growing up, we get to open up one present on Christmas Eve, and, you know, usually mom and dad would try to guide you to, you know, a present that wasn't like the big one. And, you know, because there's nothing worse than opening up the present on Christmas Eve, and then, you know, you got nothing to look forward to on Christmas Day.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, so it opened up something that wasn't like an A present. It was like a C or a D present. And, you know, then that was it. And, you know, bedtime when I was growing up was usually 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock. And, you know, I think my parents just had a collective sigh of relief at, you know, the second that the bedroom door closed and they didn't have to deal with the monster anymore. And then the next morning, you know, I'd wake up and we'd open up presents and that type of thing. Now, I will tell you, by a certain age, any present that had my name on it, I had already pre-opened long before Christmas morning and already knew everything I was going to get. So, you know.
I did that one time, and I was cured forever. Because the hell of going through that next Christmas morning, feigning surprise every time I open something that I had already seen.
Yeah.
yay!
Yay!
Well, I have to tell you, your parents did it right because my boys have it down. They somehow their bedtime gets push. They get to bed like 10:30, 11 o'clock Christmas Eve. I'm then scurrying for the next few hours. So I'm getting to bed like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
they then get up at 5.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you know,
two hours
sleep. Yeah, yeah. So that's still in the cards.
Like what, unfortunately, Rob, that 7:30 or 8 wasn't just on Christmas Eve. That was like 365 days a year. So there was no late nights for me until much, much later in life. So I think that they were smart. They said, you know, you need to have, you know, 10-12 hours worth of sleep. So, you know, go to bed. And
mine's that way though. My kids go to bed at 8:30 every other night except Christmas Eve.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe that one night. Well, see, this is what you do. The night of the 23rd, you scurry around and get all that stuff done and then hide it in places that they won't look, like, you know, the dishwasher or the dryer or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, that would suppose that I could organize the rest of my life as well as I do my iPod. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, one thing that is going to happen, folks, is that Rob is going to be back with us in all of 2016 on Thursday nights, and we're going to be doing our version of Super – no, it's not – I'm just so used to saying it because I love to say it. It's no longer going to be called Super Gay Radio because we're going to be inclusive of all people. We just don't want people to think, okay, you know, that's really kind of narrow-minded of you. It's going to be rated LGBT radio, so we're going to be doing lots of witty banter like we're doing tonight, but talking about LGBT issues and taking your calls, having interesting LGBT-flavored guests, and talking about things that are going on in the community. Rob, last words of wisdom or things you'd like to tell the listeners before we head off into the sunset?
I just hope everybody has a great holiday, however they express it and feel it, and let's go for that peace on earth thing. I think that would be really cool.
Peace on earth is a great thing. And I'm so grateful to you, Rob, for being a new friend this year and now, you know, being such a big part of next year's success with the radio show. So I appreciate you. And everybody who's out there listening tonight, this is a little song by me. And I always love it if you like it on YouTube and leave a nice comment. But I really love it if you buy it. So go spend a couple of bucks on my website. I will give you an amazing deal on my album Blonde Jesus. I'll then give you for free my album Eyes Wide. I do it as a download, so you'll have them right away, and along with my eternal thanks. This is Guess What? It's Christmas Time. We'll see you live tomorrow on the Friday Dance Party with Miles High Productions. Happy Holidays number 2 or whatever it is that we call it. I forget because I'm so excited. So enjoy this, and we'll see you next Rob.
Christmas with the sunshine in the trees. You might not even think of Santa Claus with his dogs down by the beach. Oh, their tails they are all wagging, wagging here to there. And the joyous sounds of barking without care. Or one with a big brown nose. Either way, you'll feel so happy with love from Santa's sleigh and playing with your puppy Christmas Day. Bathe and clip with bells and bows. day.
Won't you come and pick me? I'll fit down the chimney.
Santa wants me to be with you tonight.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.